chairing the COG. Vicky, since I'll be chairing the COG meeting as usual, I mean, if you want to step in here, I'm happy to defer to you.
Okay, just if you just hold on, I'm just having my screen is doing something odd, so just let me get to the agenda.
Okay.
We are now recording, just for everyone's awareness.
Okay. Let me know when we're ready to go, Matt.
We're all set whenever you're ready, Vicky.
Okay, so you'll just give me some guidance if I don't follow this correctly. Do I need to read the information about our virtual meeting here before we begin, or would you like to do that?
No, I mean, I can do it. We are hosting a hybrid meeting with in-person options as well as a virtual option via Zoom. The meeting is being recorded and will be posted to the MetroCOG website within 7 days of the meeting, as per the guidelines based on the executive order and the extended executive order through the legislature of the state of Connecticut.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to call the meeting to order. Vicky Tesoro from First Selectman from Trumbull. We'll go to item number two, which is our public participation. Is there anybody here from the public who would like to make a comment?
Madam Chair, not from the public. Just want to note for the record, we've been joined by Merrill Loretti, who holds two votes on the MPO body.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
I'm sorry. I'll just speak up. And Lynn DiGiovanni from Luke's Consulting Engineers. I just figured I would let everybody know I'm here. We're just interested in finding out kind of what's going on in the region. So thank you.
Great. Okay.
Eileen Lopez Cordon from United Illuminating is also present.
Morning, Eileen.
Hi, Vicki.
How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to make a comment at this time? Hearing none, we'll close that part of our meeting and move on to the approval of the minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 25th, 2021, which is attachment A to the agenda?
In no glass, so moved.
Second, please.
Ken Kellogg, second.
Thank you. Anyone have any changes to the minutes? If not, can I have a vote for the approval of the minutes? Do you need to do this by a roll call, Matt?
We probably should. I'll go through it very quickly.
Thank you.
Joe Kubik, Greater Bridgeport Transit.
Yes.
Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
I have to abstain because I wasn't at the meeting.
No problem. Ken Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Kellogg, yes.
Thank you. Vicky Tesoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
David Bindoglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
Thank you. David Cassetti, City of Ansonia.
Yes.
Anne-Marie Dragonis, Town of Seymour.
Yes.
Thank you. Drew Backlick, City of Derby.
Yes.
And Mayor Loretti, City of Shelton.
Yes.
Passes unanimously with one abstention.
Thank you, Matt. Okay, so now we will go to our action items. Item four on our agenda, number one, is endorsement of the transit safety performance targets. Matt, do you want to take this?
Yeah, I can take this, Vicky. So these are the safety performance targets as required by FTA for all transit districts. Doug Holcomb, Greater Bridgeport Transit, is on the line with us. If you want to say a couple words, Doug, in regards to this item, please feel free to do so now.
Sure, thank you. Recently, several years ago, we did a transit asset management plan, and that required the MPO to be consulted. And now FTA has promulgated new safety regulations, and all of the transit agencies in the country receiving federal money had to develop what are known as public transportation agency safety plans. And in those, FTA require that we develop targets for fatalities, You saw this a couple meetings ago on the highway side, fatalities and injuries. And so in our case in Bridgeport, and it's in the MPO package, we looked at our experience in 2019 and used those as the targets. And we're in the first year of implementing the plan. In fact, we've just finished our first annual review of the plan. So we're starting to look at that data the way FTA wants us to and report it. And so this is just sharing that with the MPO, and those are incorporated. Those targets are incorporated in our plan. And I believe there's one also on the agenda for Valley. That's all done under the same regulations as this one.
Thank you, Doug. Yes, and as Doug mentioned, there are two safety performance targets to endorse here, for one for Greater Bridgeport Transit, one for Valley Transit District. They are resolutions 2021-09 and 2021-10. I would leave it up to the board, but my suggestion would be that we could take both of these simultaneously, since they are dealing with the same targets and same safety measures.
Madam Chair.
So moved. Loretti.
Thank you, Mayor Loretti.
Can I have a second for that?
Second.
Great.
Who was the second? Sorry, I missed that.
That was Ken, I believe.
Okay. I couldn't hear the voice. Thank you. And I can do a roll call vote, Vicki, again. Joe Kubik, Greater Bridgeport Transit?
Yes.
Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield?
Yes.
Thank you. Ken Kellogg, Town of Monroe?
Yes.
Vicki Tesoro, Town of Trumbull?
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport?
Yes.
David Bindleglass, Town of Easton?
Yes.
David Cassetti, City of Ansonia?
Yes.
Anne Marie DeGronis, Town of Seymour?
Yes.
Drew Backlick, City of Derby?
Yes.
Thank you. Mayor Loretti, City of Shelton and Valley Transit District?
Yes.
Thank you all. The motion passes unanimously for both resolution 2021-09 and -10.
Madam Chair, may I ask or inquire? Doug Holcomb has to go to a meeting at 10:30, and there's another item on the agenda, action item 432, regarding GBT. Maybe we could take, I'd like to make a motion to take the item out of order.
That's fine. Do we have a second for that?
Skimmer, you're going to second.
Okay. Matt, do you want to vote on that, or is that just fine that we take that out of order to item?
We can just do a voice vote on that one.
So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, then we're going to move item 432, forward at this point.
Yeah, so this is amendment 2021-12, attachment E in your packets. It is a STIP amendment, TIP-STIP amendments for the 2021-2024 TIP-STIP FTA projects. The first project, letter I, is 0300-0196. It's scour rehabilitation on the New Haven main line for Metro North. The second project is 0410-XXX, two projects for the Greater Bridgeport Transit. One is a replacement of the radio system, and the second is a fire suppression system for the new battery electric buses, which will be implemented in the GBT bus depot. Doug, I don't know if you have anything else to mention on those two.
You know, first, thanks for doing this up front. I really do appreciate that. And, you know, I normally would not ask for such a thing as that. So I appreciate it. But these are a replacement of an aging radio system for the 100-plus vehicle fleet, dispatch centers. I think we're going to be fortunate enough to move on to the state's the public safety radio microwave backbone. So we're ready to do that. And the capital unit at Condot has agreed that that's an important project, and that's why that appears here. And the other one is enhancements to the fire suppression in our garage here for the battery electric buses that are here now, and to protect the rest of the fleet. We store 80 buses indoors here at the facility on Cross Street in Bridgeport. So this is updating the fire suppression.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Okay, so we brought this to the floor. So is there any more discussion? Okay, seeing okay. None.
I'll make a motion that we approve the resolutions as presented.
Okay, so
yeah, we should have a motion and a second to approve them, Vicki, because okay. The first resolution was just to move it.
Right, okay, great. So can I have a second to that motion then, please?
Back in Ken Plato.
Thanks, Ken. Any more discussion? If not, we'll bring this to a vote. Matt, do you want to do a roll call for this?
Of course. Joe Kubik, Greater Bridgeport Transit.
Yes.
Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
Yes.
Ken Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Yes.
Vicki DeSoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
David Bindleglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
David Cassetti, City of Ansonia.
Yes.
Anne-Marie Dragonis, Town of Seymour.
Yes.
Drew Backlick, City of Derby.
Yes.
And Mayor Loretti, City of Shelton and Valley Transit District.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for moving on the agenda and for your support for the targets and the capital programming. I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
All right. Good work, Doug.
Okay, so we're going to go back to our number two under the action items. Can I have a motion to bring that to the floor, please?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt resolution 2021-11 as presented.
Thank you, Ken. Can I have a second, please?
Second, Loretti.
Thank you. Matt, would you like to take this, please?
Yes, I can do so. Thank you, Vicki. So this is resolution 2021-11, amendments to the federal fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP-STIP for federal highways funded projects. There are four amendments in this resolution. I will quickly read them off, and then I have a little bit more information on the first one that I'll go back to. First one is 0036-0184, Route 34 reconstruction in the City of Derby. The second item is 0170-3605, Transportation Demand Management. This is a statewide initiative for Connecticut DOT to fund transportation demand. 0174-0443, Traffic Signal LED Relamping for Signals in District 4. And 0174-0448, Traffic Control Signals in District 4 as well. So those are district-wide projects. If I can go back just to the first item, number 0036-0184, Derby Reconstruction. There was a number of back and forth between Naugatuck Valley, COG, and Connecticut DOT in regards to the funding for this project. We received yesterday evening a updated funding table, the resolution, and it was sent out to every member this morning. The resolution is unrevised and is carries forward as it was presented in the agenda packet. We're just making a small adjustment to the funding table in regards to where the funding has come from. I'm just going to read that out quickly into the record so it's part of the meeting minutes. So this is the reconstruction of Derby, Route 34 in the City of Derby. There are four funding programs that are being utilized for this. There is the surface transportation program in Bridgeport, funding year 2021. The total cost is $17,379,000, with a federal share of $10,703,000, a state share of $2,676,000. And a local share of $4 million, which has already been authorized by the Naugatuck Valley COG at their board for use of LOTTIP funds, not to exceed that $4 million out of LOTTIP for the local portion. There is also an HIPB program, again, construction year 2021, $1.372 million total. Federal share is $1,097,000. The state share is $274,000. There's an HPPS program, again, construction 2021, Total funding amount is $2,749,000. The federal share is $2,199,000. The state share is $550,000, and there's no local share on that one. And the last one is another STP Bridgeport funding mechanism. That is construction for 2021. And there's no funding amounts in there currently. This is an advanced construction entry that allows Connecticut DOT to move the project forward while still looking to identify about a $5 million funding gap that will be utilized in this advanced construction entry for federal and state shares. Again, the project has $4 million of LOTSIP money from the Naugatuck Valley COG going towards this. And that is the not to exceed limit of LOTSIP and the local share of this project.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Any discussion for resolution 2021-11?
Let's move the question.
I believe we already moved this, correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So if there's no discussion, we'll do a roll call vote, Matt. Thanks.
No problem. Joe Kubik, Greater Bridgeport Transit.
Yes.
Thank you. Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
Yes.
Ken Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Yes.
Vicki DeSoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
Thank you. David Bindaglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
David Cassetti, City of Ansonia.
Yes.
Anne-Marie Dragonis, Town of Seymour.
Yes.
Drew Backlick, City of Derby.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Drew. And Mayo Reddy, City of Shelton and Valley Transit District.
Yes.
Thank you. The motion carries unanimously.
Great. Okay, let's move forward. Matt, just remind me, we did three. Did we do one on three or just two? Is that taken care of now? Did we vote on that?
Everything on item, yeah, actually item three is all taken care of.
Okay. Okay, great. So let's go to number four on the action items. And can I have a motion to move resolution 2021-13 to the floor?
So moved, Loretti.
Thank you. Can I have a second, please?
Second, Backlick.
Thank you. Okay, Matt?
Sure, thank you. As Vicki mentioned, this is resolution 2021-13, attachment F. This is for the endorsement of the fiscal year 2022 and 2023 Unified Planning Work Program, also known as the UPWP. This is the planning document we set out and get approved by Connecticut DOT and Federal Highways to provide our transportation planning funding for both MetroCOG, six municipalities, as well as the four municipalities of the Greater Bridgeport and Valley MPO that reside within the Naugatuck Valley COG. As we have done in the past, for the past two UPWPs, there is a funding mechanism which sub-allocates by population per capita for the four valley towns, an agreement that MetroCOG will pass through the money for the planning of those four municipalities to NVCOG, as we've done in the past. And this, again, will allow the full transportation planning funding for both MetroCOG and the four valley municipalities.
Thanks, Matt. Is there any further discussion about resolution 2021-13? Seeing none, we'll bring this to a vote. Matt?
Sure. Joe Kubik, Greater Bridgeport Transit.
Yes, in favor of the motion.
Thank you, Joe. Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
Yes.
Thank you. Ken Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Yes.
Vicki DeSoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
Thank you. David Bindaglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
David Cassetti, City of Ansonia.
Yes.
Anne-Marie Dragonis, Town of Seymour.
Yes.
Thank you. Drew Backlick, City of Derby.
Yes.
And Mayor Reddy, City of Shelton and Valley Transit District.
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries unanimously.
Thanks, Matt. Moving to item five, other business. Matt, do you want to take these items?
Yeah, sure. This was a request of Chairman Hoydick, who is now not on the phone. She asked if we could add an update on the ARP grant, American Rescue Plan grant, and deployment. As she is no longer on, Vicki, I'm not sure if we want to have this discussion now, or we can kind of bring it up at another at a future meeting, or as a side discussion. But it was Mayor Hoydick's request. But as she's no longer on, I'm not sure if it's something everyone wants to discuss now, or we can kind of move that off for now.
We can leave it to everyone to decide. If we'd like to wait until she's present, that's fine as well, since there's obviously more information coming out and more webinars to attend about the ARP.
Through the chair, I wouldn't mind just a couple of minutes summary of what would be involved in the regional MPO COG basis, just to understand that.
Yeah, so I do have this as a discussion item on the COG agenda as well. Our thoughts was, given the influx of federal dollars, at the COG basis, really more so than the MPO basis, could be identified services or projects or programs that potentially could be enacted or initiated or continued on a regional basis. MetroCOG and NVCOG respectively would be very happy to engage with our member municipalities in understanding what sort of needs are out there and what of those needs could be addressed potentially on a regional level by pooling some of the ARP money potentially for a shared service or shared initiatives across the region. So I don't have anything specific, Ken, to your question. I wanted to leave it up to a discussion among the board members and see if there were commonalities or opportunities there where we could pool some of those resources that the municipalities are receiving via the American Rescue Plan to have a greater cost benefit and a greater return on investment at a regional level than just municipality by municipality.
So through the chair, I don't know if it might be helpful to have a quick comment from Bridgeport. I'm pretty much the point person on the program for the city right now. As some of you know, Bridgeport is receiving the largest allocation in the region, both the municipal side and the school district side. We're starting a process of developing a plan for council and the mayor. We've had a group involved. Honestly, my gut is, from our perspective, we've got a huge amount of need, underserved community, the rest of it, you all understand. There's going to be not that much used for our regular budget relief. We're frankly focusing mostly on the eligible uses for community social service programs and for capital infrastructure that would be eligible. And we have some doozies in the way of capital infrastructure needs, not to mention the $300 million sewer plant upgrade that's being required by DEEP. So I'm not sure, Matt, honestly, I guess what the reason I'm describing that is, if some of you, if there's something that you feel might be a more regional interest area, by all means, be happy to hear that, pass it on to the mayor. But I know we're developing a fairly lengthy local list for the city that, is going to be pretty comprehensive. So I just thought I'd describe that briefly.
Madam Chair, if I might just weigh in on this point. Matt gave a good description of it. A little bit more of the background on this is Connecticut is one of the few states where the county allocation from the Congress did not go to county government. It's being distributed on a per capita basis to municipalities. So there's about $946 million of money designated for county in Connecticut that is going to the towns. So what all of the COGs, not just the two of ours, but all the COGs in the state have been discussing is how do we accomplish any regional activities that you folks want to put together that may overlap town boundaries. Neither Matt nor I are asking for you to give us your county money. That's not what this is about. It's just providing a forum where you can do what they're doing in other states. In other states, the county money, you have a board of supervisors and municipal officials sitting around the table deciding how to split up that money. I think the prorate roughly for our two regions is about $150 million of county money. on a per cap regional basis, might be a little more than that. So if there were some idea to do broadband or to do some type of activities, regional sewer use work that spread across town boundaries, then that's something we could facilitate if CEOs wanted to do that, wanted to take that up. But again, we would do it on a COG basis, I think, Matt. We wouldn't do it on an NPO basis.
Yes.
And just one other comment, I think that should be part of any of this. And again, I'm sure Richard would be happy to discuss any regional thoughts, but the money will flow directly to localities. It will not flow through the other forms. So financially, you know, it's going to have to be accounted for by locality, and the quarterly reports will all be required to submit to the feds.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it will flow. The guidance that I've read thus far was relatively in line with the legislation that was passed by Congress that for the states without county governments, that the money earmarked for counties would flow directly to municipalities without any sort of pass through or taking at the state level. So yeah, that is 100% correct, Ken. Thank you. So I think, seeing no other comments, Vicki, feel free to continue.
Thanks, Matt. So we'll just go on to our next meetings, which of July 29th and September 30th. So any more discussion about that, or are we ready to ask for a motion to adjourn?
Ready for a motion whenever.
Yep, can I have a motion to adjourn, please?
I'm moved.
And a second, please.
Second, Backler.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are recording again.
Thank you. All right, welcome. We are now in the regular meeting of the MetroCOG board for May 27th. This is a hybrid meeting in compliance with the governor's executive orders. As such, anyone may attend in person or remotely using the instructions provided on the agenda. It's being conducted in real time, is open to the public, and anyone may listen or view this meeting anonymously. Please be advised it is being recorded and will be made available to the public upon request or posted on the MetroCOG website. All right, Matt, would you, you know, you are doing such a great, can you just do the roll for me? Oh, maybe not.
Uh-oh.
We lost Matt.
No, I'm here. Sorry, I was on mute. I was trying to make Kyle a co-host for his presentation. I apologize. We're having a little technical difficulty over here. First time back in the office, so we're trying to work through all the kinks. So yes, we have, I will go through quickly. First, Selectman Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Present.
First, Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes, I'm here.
First, Selectman Bindleglass, Town of Easton.
Here.
Jackie Bertalone as a proxy for First Selectwoman Kupchick, Town of Fairfield.
Here.
And Ken Flato, proxy for Mayor Ganim, City of Bridgeport.
Here.
And in MetroCOG, actually in the office, in the conference room, as you can see, we have myself, Colleen Kelleher, Finance Director, Megan Sloan, Planning Director, and Patrick Carlton, Deputy Director of MetroCOG. And we also have with us Kyle Talente from RKG Associates, who is assisting MetroCOG in the drafting of our comprehensive economic development strategy, of which you will be have a presentation shortly.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Moving on to item two, public participation. Is there anyone here from the public who wishes to speak? Per our rules, it would have to be a matter on our agenda. Is there anyone in the public would like to speak on an item on our agenda? Please remember to unmute yourself to indicate a desire to speak.
I'll just introduce myself again this morning. Good morning, Lindy Giovanni from Luke's Consulting Engineers, and I'm just here to keep tabs on what's going on in the region. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Excellent. Welcome and thanks for joining. Anyone else? Hearing none, we'll go on to item three on our agenda, which is the March 25th 2021 meeting minutes, attachment A. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
I'll make that motion. Oh. I'll second.
I, Motion by First Selectman Middleglass, seconded by First Selectman Tesoro. Matt, could you do the roll, please?
I can. First Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
First Selectman Middleglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
Abstain.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
And First Selectman Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously with one abstention.
Thank you. All right, moving along to item four, presentations. As you mentioned earlier, we're going to get a SEDS presentation from Kyle. Matt, do you want to introduce this before you want to just?
Sure. Yeah. This is. Yeah. So Kyle Talente from RKG Associates was the firm selected through a competitive selection process to assist MetroCog in drafting our comprehensive economic development strategy for the region. It is being funded through our regional services grant, as well as a grant from the Economic Development Administration in their technical assistance planning program. So we've been working through this with RKG since December when we brought them on. They've been doing a great job, along with Patrick Carlton, taking the lead from MetroCog in coordinating the engagement with the private sector, as well as municipal staff and other economic development related public and private sector stakeholders in the region. So this was to give an update to the MetroCog board as to kind of where we are in the process, which is moving along very nicely. And that's where we are.
Yeah, really quickly, as Matt mentioned, we've done a lot of the data collection, a lot of the public outreach and engagement. And Kyle is here to give an update to you all on some of the preliminary findings and some of the proposed recommendations that are likely to come out of the strategy when it is fully developed. So with that, I'll turn it over back to Matt, or Matt, if you just want to go.
Yeah, Kyle, please feel free to take it from here.
Sure. Great. Thank you, everybody. Are you all able to see the presentation on the screen?
Yep.
Yes.
Excellent. So wanted to kind of go through, as both Matt and Pat indicated, we're using a horse racing analogy, being that we're in the midst of the Triple Crown here, is we are rounding the last turn and heading down the home stretch on this. The intent of this meeting is to kind of give you a presentation of the most prominent findings and lay out some of the recommendation, you know, the more strategic recommendations we think are worth having a conversation with you all. And so without further ado, moving into it, just kind of going through some of those big findings. This is probably stuff that's not very surprising to all of you. First one is MetroCog is an aging yet diversifying community. There is a number of households that are aging in place. That is a finding that is not unique to your region. However, it has an impact from an economic development perspective. First off is, you know, as the baby boomer generation, which is a substantial portion of our labor force right now, retires or semi-retires, it's going to create the demand for new labor, not just for growth within the region, but to sustain the jobs that we already have. Secondly, it creates a demand for a diversifying type of housing. Many seniors are not looking to, at least nationally, the trend is they're not looking to stay in their houses permanently, and they're looking for smaller, different types of housing options that allow them to be a little bit more flexible in terms of their travel. And I can tell you from my own personal experience with my in-laws, they prefer to have an apartment that they rent and then be able to travel between my wife and my sister-in-laws so they can come visit the grandkids. And so that's just one microcosm example, but that tends to be a trend from an economic development. It's impactful from the standpoint of the diversifying need for housing. And then finally, MetroCog has a more racially and ethnically diverse population within the region and business base for Fairfield County and Connecticut. And that's an asset from our perspective in terms of opportunities. And we'll talk about that in a little while. But the reality is that there are different business opportunities that exist within MetroCog that frankly, from our perspective, should be celebrated and pursued. The next thing, the labor force is following similar transition patterns to much of the Northeast. You're a better educated labor force. The region is growing in folks with postgraduate degrees, not just bachelor's degrees, but postgraduate degrees. That's a tremendous opportunity, both for attracting white collar jobs, but also for entrepreneurial development. And we think this is an important finding for the region in terms of an opportunity, which is you have these upper mid-level or executive level individuals that oftentimes could become the next generation of new business creation. And so from an economic development perspective, the opportunity for a regional entrepreneurial small business development growth concept, we think is something that should be strongly considered. Your proximity to other major markets, your transportation connectivity, and your relative affordability, particularly for housing, and I say relative affordability, by no means is it affordable when you consider it on a national scale, but it is when you're talking about it from a regional scale, is attracting commuters. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for the region. It's more people that come here that could be potential workers for local companies. But it also does indicate from the housing side of things in terms of a lot of the housing that's being developed is not being occupied by folks who are coming to work in the region. And so that has an impact from an economic development, from a business recruitment standpoint, in terms of trying to make sure you have a good connectivity between the jobs that you're creating and you're trying to maintain and the housing available to folks who want to live in the region. We just talked about this a little bit. You know, within the region, there's an obvious dichotomy of residents. We talked about the growth of the highly educated and the attractiveness of the region as a place to live. However, there is a fairly sizable lesser educated and lower income house base in metro region. And frankly, that's an act from our perspective, from an economic development perspective, because there's a substantial amount of jobs, both in the service and industry, but also within the production industry that don't require formal four-year degrees or postgraduate degrees. And so maintaining this population, maintaining the continuum of housing affordability, maintaining the continuum of skill sets, I think is going to be critical from a long-term sustainability from an economic development perspective, especially given the presence of your production-based economy within the Metrocog region. And frankly, this is something that we believe should be not just preserved, but celebrated and enhanced. That being said, the data does suggest that there are opportunities to provide some non-traditional education for folks. There is, you know, within that larger, particularly lower educated population, there isn't, at least from the interviews that we held and the research that we did, there isn't a strong connectivity between some of the better paying jobs that don't require post-secondary degrees and the formal training that's being offered, particularly in the high school and even down to the middle school level, to provide the opportunities for these folks to understand that there are career paths available locally that provide good living wages that don't require you to go to post-secondary education. And this is something that we think that there are already a lot of pieces in place through the technical college, through your public school system, but we feel like there's ways to enhance that connectivity and reach down further than, you know, juniors and seniors or folks that are recent graduates of high school to try and create career paths that provide opportunities for those students that maybe aren't on a college track. And so there we feel like this is an untapped opportunity, if you will, within the region. You know, your economy is at a pivotal transition point. And there, if you look through this slide deck, hopefully you have before this meeting, but we talk about the presence and the prevalence of your manufacturing and your production base. And I think that there's some value there in terms of understanding, you know, what do we want to be as we grow up, if you will, and the preservation and the expansion of those opportunities. Metrocog's an in-between marketplace, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, there are our neighbors, our regional neighbors that surround us tend to have stronger identities in terms of what types of businesses and industries that they offer. And so this is one where we feel like there's an opportunity for the region to truly define it. And I mentioned, you know, already around the production-based economy, thinking that is the hook, if you will. You have a strong fundamental in education and healthcare, which is a positive thing. It's a positive thing from a quality of life issue. It's also a positive thing from job creation, but these aren't what we in economic development call primary jobs or wealth generating jobs. These are jobs that are supporting your existing population base. They're here because there's a large population base that needs to be served. And so the general client base for these jobs are folks that are already here that it becomes, if you will, a redistribution of the wealth and not a creation of wealth, as opposed to primary jobs like your production-based economy, where they're selling their goods and services outside the region, and the money they bring in and pay the salaries of their employees is actually building wealth within the region. And so while the education and healthcare do have a strong, they are support-based economy. They are dependent upon households and demographic shifts. And so, which is, as you continue to grow and you continue to expand, is going to be a good thing. And frankly, as your population base continues to age and the baby boomers continue to move into a more senior age cohorts, they're going to continue to expand. And that's frankly a good thing. However, once again, from an economic development perspective, the true goal should be around how do we continue to attract the types of employers that are building wealth within our region. And you can see at the final bullet, you do have some strong characteristics in manufacturing. It's the third highest location quotient in the region, driven particularly by your aerospace industry, which I'm sure is not a surprise to anybody. The technical and professional services and financial and insurance are here, but they're frankly more prevalent elsewhere. And this goes back to that pivotal transition point in terms of what do we want to define ourselves to be as we move forward. RKG Associates' recommendation on that is, the evolution of your manufacturing, your production base should be the key concern for the region. It's already a predominant and a primary component of what the Metrocog region is. It is transitioning. You have seen the decline in overall jobs, but that is as much an issue of automation and artificial intelligence and the ability to produce with fewer human beings as it is the natural loss of jobs because the area may not be as competitive. And I say this to say is, as we're looking at production and manufacturing as a target industry and as an opportunity for Metrocog, it's as much celebrating and trying to embrace the role of automation and AI and trying to find ways to capitalize on it and bring that to the region as it is to try and preserve the jobs we have and bring more manufacturers to the region so that we can also increase the human element of it as well. One thing I'll point out here that's noted elsewhere in the thing is much of your space is functionally obsolete, which does create a challenge. And we'll talk about that in just a little while in terms of what that means. Quality of life issues in Metrocog involve trade-offs. You are extremely strong in certain areas. You are not as competitive in others. Some of them are things that are within the control of the region. However, many of them are not. Your transportation infrastructure, your skilled labor force obviously are strong. Your relative affordability as to live attracts people, but not necessarily people coming to work in Metrocog, which are things, particularly the housing thing is something that there is a level of control that you can do through land use and through new development opportunities within the region. However, things like the high cost of doing business in the state, tax, energy costs, environmental regulations, these are things that you can advocate for changes. These are things that you can spearhead and try and coordinate with other regional partners, but frankly are beyond the control, if you will, of the six municipalities per se. There's not a whole lot you can do about addressing energy costs except for trying to advocate for policy changes to create incentives that can reduce the cost of energy efficiency within new buildings. And so there are things you can do on the edge of those things. However, particularly around the stateside stuff is advocation and becoming a leader to try and drive for change that can help make not just your region, but the state more competitive. Housing affordability, we talked about this a number of times. We are relatively more affordable to many of our neighboring areas in Fairfield County, but it's still challenging. When you looked at it from a cost burden perspective, frankly, Bridgeport, which is one of the most affordable municipalities in the region, has some of the highest cost burdening. And that goes back to talking about while you are relatively affordable to say Greenwich, the folks that are living in Bridgeport are struggling to afford the price points that they have. And I bring that up to say from an economic development perspective, the need for jobs, housing balance, the need to increase your housing supply, not just from overall count, but the diversity of housing will help mitigate some of the inevitable escalation in costs. And we recognize, RKG recognizes that it's not necessarily going to be something that you're going to be able to solve. This is an issue that we study in regions throughout the United States and throughout New England. And we recognize the fact that the especially in areas that are seeing strong employment growth, you know, it is very, very challenging from a land use and regulatory and frankly, from a public support perspective to try and develop as much housing as there is demand for it. But the reality is that there are things that we can do to try and mitigate and minimize that impact to be able to continue to develop a continuum of affordability so that our industries can continue to thrive. And I will tell you that this is one in particular that we heard from some of the production-based employers in the region, which is the struggle to find folks to be able to and pay them a wage that they can afford to live here, but also a wage that the business is able to support to be able to be profitable. And so I go back to the point of, you know, there is an inextricable connection between housing and economic development. And the reality is if there aren't policies, while housing-based, that are economic development-based to try and make it possible for even not just your business that you're trying to recruit, but your existing companies, it's going to continue to create challenges for those that are already here and doing business to continue to operate and sustain. The final point I'll make here is the region's reputation for quality of life. You know, we've done an extensive amount of analysis that will be detailed in the final document. And I will say that the perceptions that we have heard through interviews and articles that we have read, frankly, we don't feel are accurate to the reality of what the quality of life is, particularly on issues like education and crime, that you know, can be sensationalized within the media. And, you know, an area can develop a reputation that can long outlive the realities of that area. And so from that perspective is, you know, continued improvement in those areas, I think, is going to be critical, but equally as critical is going to be an aggressive fact-based marketing campaign to change those perceptions. Particularly, you know, this is not just for folks that don't live within the MetroCog region, but to try and change the perceptions of folks that do, that, you know, frankly, may not have been to downtown Bridgeport in decades and don't realize how much change has occurred or how different things may be, and getting the actual facts out of the situation out there so that we can change some of those perceptions. You all may or may not be aware, but in this day and age, economic development is done predominantly through virtual means. It's through online research, through looking at economic development websites, through going through existing property, land and building data availability databases. And so a lot of times regions are eliminated from consideration for a relocation or for expansion well before they even know there's an opportunity out there. And I say that to say is that from a quality of life perspective, having the right information out there and having the facts that are available to folks that are doing that sort of research is going to be equally as critical as having an accurate and up-to-date database of all the availability of properties that can be acquired or can be occupied in the short term. The regionals, this is one challenge that all regions face, and I respect is something that frankly is maybe even a little bit more pronounced in New England and in MetroCog, which is recognizing the differences of each of the communities. Frankly, this is one of the things that we think is a primary recommendation we'll talk about in a moment coming out of the back end of this, is how do we act regionally and think locally? That's definitely something that we feel is a next step, an important, critical first next step so that we can truly get into a regional economic development strategy. We recognize the fact that each of your six municipalities are very different. Some recommendations are going to be better for some of the communities than others. And that needs to be taken into account. And to the extent that we have, I believe we are trying to be respectful of that. On the back end of that, though, is the continued marketing and outreach, just selling the idea that regional success doesn't necessarily have to occur within each of the six municipalities' boundaries per se. Is that folks that live in certain municipalities are still going to have access to job opportunities in other municipalities. The interconnectivity of your economies is definitely another thing that needs to be brought to bear and become more publicly engaged and publicly understood. Particularly, you know, as from our perspective, as it stands with Bridgeport, the city of Bridgeport, you know, for better or for worse, it is the economic heart of the region. And the more viable and successful it is, the more viable and successful the other municipalities can be as well. And so we feel like there's a number of opportunities here. You can see here on this particular slide is, you know, things like co-investments between jurisdictions, truly regional strategies. Just in the last meeting, as I was, you know, eavesdropping in on that conversation, the discussion around transportation and joint municipal transportation investments. Well, this is no different from that, from an economic development perspective, is how do we create a truly regional economic development strategy that is implemented at that level rather than at the six municipalities? And it creates a tremendous amount of opportunity, not the least of which is the economies of scale, which is the cost savings of being able to do certain things one time as a region rather than trying to do it multiple times across the different municipalities. So the SWOT analysis, a lot of this is stuff that we've already talked about, strengths, your proximity to major markets, the transportation network, your skilled labor force, the production-based economy that we talked about that we feel should be a priority. The one I will talk about is the implementation infrastructure. Through this process, we have learned that there are a lot of individuals, there are a lot of entities that are enacting and involved in economic development in different ways. However, they're not really being coordinated very well. They are struggling in some cases because the resources aren't abundant, and so they struggle in terms of implementation. But from a strength perspective, they exist. And we feel like if there is a centralized economic development entity that can bring them together in their various pursuits and interests, there is an instantaneous, not just capacity to implement, but also credibility in terms of entities that are out there that are doing it on a very small scale, but they're doing it successfully. And they can build that credibility and they can build an implementation base that can leverage the resources that are brought to bear from a regional perspective. From the weaknesses, you know, you can see here the one that I wanted to focus on in this discussion is that unified vision. And hopefully this will provide that, the strategy, there will be a vision statement, there will be a definition of goals and objectives that we're trying to address. And we're hoping that this document could become that unifying vision that will enable stronger coordination and collaboration, not just amongst the municipalities, but between the public and the private sector, between all the different nonprofits and those that implementation infrastructure that I just talked about that can rally together and find ways to be more effective and efficient in addressing the issues that are near and dear to their hearts. You know, just some of the others that are in here, you know, physical inventory, we talked about functional obsolescence, that's the public perception. And the lifestyle offer options. And I bring this up as a weakness from the standpoint of while there is a demand in growing, for example, the increase in the seniors in our community and the demand and need for those lifestyles that are expanding, really there isn't a lot of diversity when you compare to other regions in terms of attracting particularly young professionals. I will say that, you know, one of the things that is lacking is that it location that is something that's going to be competitive with some of your regional neighbors that already have some of those things to be able to attract that talent into the region. You have particularly the traditional suburban single family home in spades. I think one of the things is that live, work, play destination, the strength of that is one of the things that we would like to see continue to develop. Opportunities. Bridgeport, I talked to you about this already from a standpoint of it is the economic heart of the region. There's a lot of opportunities here. There's a number of recommendations we feel that are consistent with stuff that's already, for example, in the comp plan to try and build that live, work, play environment. But the fibrous connectivity to the other towns, I think, is also something that could be developed. redevelopment, you know, there's not a lot of green space left in the region. And so one of the things that we've identified through this process is as the very few, some of those larger spots that you have, how are they going to be utilized? You know, and this goes back to the discussion I said earlier, which is what do we want to be when we grow up? From our perspective, one of the things that should be considered as you look at these redevelopment is continue to expand and identify ways to integrate production-based economy, makerspace into those redevelopment strategies rather than just traditional residential with some commercial space in it. Creating new opportunities, and it doesn't have to be large scale. We're not necessarily talking about million square foot distribution centers or 250,000 square foot production facilities, but the idea of trying to attract and bring more entities that make things that are sold outside of the region, not only can continue to celebrate the production economy that already exists here and the employment base that you already have, but increase wealth opportunities for both folks that live here now, as well as folks that want to come to the region and would want to take advantage of that opportunity to be able to serve the greater New England marketplace. The one that I truly wanted to focus in on here, though, is reiterating the point around entrepreneurial development. Not only do you have a wealthy and highly educated employment base in the region, you have both technical college and four-year universities and colleges that already are involved in entrepreneurial development from an education perspective. There, once again, I go back to that implementation infrastructure. There are a lot of pieces in place already. How do we create that entity that can drive entrepreneurial small business development and acceleration within the region? Everything from coordinating with the education institutions to creating the physical spaces or marketing the physical spaces that exist to support those types of businesses, to organizing an investor angel network of folks that already live in the region that have substantial amount of resources that can help small businesses grow and accelerate, not just be created. And so we really think that there's a lot of opportunity around that entrepreneurial development component. The threats, we talked about the regional in execution and the intra-region competition and the challenge, you know, the oftentimes the winner-take-all mentality. We talked about your aging workforce. The one I really wanted to focus on here is the funding structure challenges. The reality is to truly implement a regional economic development strategy is going to require resources to create that regional economic development entity. We feel like we've come up with a strategy that truly brings together the public and private sector. I'll talk about that in a minute, but really, how do we engage, how do we get the business community active and engaged, not just both from a leadership perspective, from an investment perspective, to then try and tie and leverage resources that are put forward by the municipalities. And I will say that it is extremely unlikely that a regional economic development entity is going to be funded from outside the six municipalities that make up MetroCog. To sit here and turn around and look at the state and say, okay, put the money forward, I just don't believe that's going to be the reality. And so finding ways to bring together the municipalities with the private sector to try and fund that regional-based economic development opportunity is a challenge. And we recognize that. Hopefully we've come with a solution or at least a strategy that the region can build upon, but that's definitely going to be one of the threats to how effective the region is at implementing this strategy once it is completed. From a target industry perspective, what I wanted to focus on here is for those of you who are aware or around the 2009 One Future SEDs, which included many of the municipalities south and west of you along the coast, had a very diverse target industry base over here. A lot of those things really were not focused on MetroCog per se. Some of them still are relevant. However, from our perspective, the target industries that MetroCog should be pursuing tie into the production-based economy, healthcare, and recreation leisure. It doesn't mean that things like bioscience or financial institutions can't be successful here, but what we feel like is if the region is going to invest in business recruitment or business retention, these are the areas where you're going to have the greatest potential for success in terms of attracting companies and maintaining the companies that you already have. The one I will talk about that I think is truly is that intermediate products manufacturing. You know, folks like Sikorsky that exist in the region, you know, obviously create a certain type of economy, but there are several different production-based markets that create the widgets and the bolts and the tools that are needed for Sikorsky to succeed. And we think there's a lot of opportunity for the MetroCog region to work with some of your larger existing manufacturers and assemblers to create a value proposition for those companies that support and serve those businesses to come into the region and to be successful here. So from an implementation framework perspective, the strategy is going to be broken down into these various categories, as you see here. Hopefully that is understandable. And when you look through this, you kind of got a sense of why we are going to be organizing the recommendations in this way. I will say that, once again, this is a regional economic development strategy. These aren't going to be specific to any municipality per se, but rather those tools, strategies, concepts that are going to be to the benefit of the region. And we recognize the fact that some of them may be recommendations that are leaning more towards one municipality over another or a couple of municipalities over others. But you know, the reality is that it is probably not in the region's interest to try and make every municipality the same and trying to have everything everywhere. And so hopefully you all recognize the value of, you know, certain ideas would be better in certain areas and why that would be the case. So from those priority, those higher level actions, you know, I've talked about this a lot. I'm not going to belabor it much more, but the idea of regionalism, the need to get the communities, the residents of your communities to understand the concepts like rising tides, raises all ships. And, you know, the sum of you as a region is greater than the parts individually. The economies of scale you can generate by implementing strategies as a group rather than one, you know, individually having, you know, multiples operating simultaneously. That level of outreach and engagement needs to happen to build buy-in. Because the reality is that, you know, Connecticut in particular has been municipally, you know, grassroots local level. And for the most part, we recognize that there is a lot of value to that. And there's definitely certain things that are much more strategic and effective and efficient being done at the local level. But certain things, and I'll go back to the example of entrepreneurial development, is frankly something that makes a whole lot more sense being done on a regional level, trying to bring all those resources together under a single umbrella, rather than having each of the municipalities trying to implement their own entrepreneurial development program. And similarly amongst that is the unified implementation. The establishment of a single entity from our perspective is one of the things that should be pursued right out of the gate. Creating an entity or the staffing and financial capacity to execute many of these recommendations, we think is going to be a critical step to your success. I already kind of spilled the beans a little bit about how we feel that going down. We envision a true public-private partnership that brings together the leadership, knowledge base, and financial resources of the private sector to be partnered with the municipalities to drive that regional economic development. I will say we've already begun some of that outreach. We're going to put in a number of recommendations of how to go about engaging with the business leaders within your region to try and get them to the table. But some of the things that I think are critical to understand is that regional economic development entity, particularly if it's going to be partially funded by the private sector, is going to need to be focused around the interests and passions that those business entities have. Obviously, things like workforce development is usually a common one because, you know, workforce development benefits all companies. But you need to know your audience. And as you get into this and you start to flesh out what that implementation entity looks like and those business partners that are going to come to the table with the resources is going to drive in part some of those priorities, particularly in the short term as you come out of the gate. There are some examples that we were able to pull together, some local, some regional and national, that just for your edification of what we're considering here. Locally, the Metro Hartford Alliance, it's a regional economic development entity. They focus in on marketing, business retention, recruitment, workforce development, entrepreneurial development, and it truly is a joint funded effort. That's probably the most close local example that we could find and we felt consistent with where we were going. There are some other national examples that we've both worked with and are just aware of that have been extremely successful. The Hampton Roads Alliance, the real lessons learned here is the municipalities that make up Hampton Roads are fiercely independent and extremely competitive, particularly when it comes to business recruitment. However, what they learned was by trying to do that stuff independently created challenges because, you know, particularly mid-size and larger businesses don't want to deal with individual municipalities. They want to minimize who they work with. And so these 11 jurisdictions, which include both cities and counties, realized that they needed to come together for that process and then have a single entity that marketed on their behalf. And then once the prospect was landed and they were looking, they were each of them allowed to pitch the sites that they felt best matched what the prospects needed. So this is an example of, you know, an area where even though they were fiercely independent, they were frankly very competitive with each other. They recognized that working together was better than working independently. And then the other example I have here is the Greenville Area Development Corporation. Greenville, South Carolina has been held up nationally as a region that has truly found ways to find success in economic development. They took advantage of new market tax credits and effectively completely redefined the city of Greenville, which is, if you've never been there and visited, it is an absolutely phenomenal. However, the point here is that this is one where they were able to engage with their business community and get a substantial amount of funding and implementation out of their chamber of commerce and out of their businesses there to fund things. Particularly, they do a lot of workforce development internships and apprenticeships, particularly around their production base. So we wanted, you know, talking about it is great, but we wanted to put out there to all of you some ideas of some of those entities if you are so inclined to look at what we're talking about here for your region. Business retention management.
We're running a little long here. Can we try to wrap up these last couple slides as quickly as possible?
Sure. So business retention, expansion, recruitment, I think this speaks for itself. You know, obviously there are issues that are going to be locally based, but the bigger picture item of trying to sell the MetroCog region is something that frankly would work better on a regional base. Building your specialties. I think that once again, I already talked and dealt with entrepreneurial development. Workforce development is another issue. Your arts, culture, entertainment. This is one where there's a lot of individual entities out there, but it's not really coordinated. We really feel like a regional economic development approach where you provide resources and opportunities for those entities to work together, where it's no longer a zero-sum game, if you will, for dollars, will benefit the region because you'll be able to maximize and multiply the effect of all those individual entities by working as a single group. And then asset development. This is one I think where we feel like there are specific locations and sites where the strategies may not be reflective of the economic development opportunities per se. We feel there are definitely opportunities to not only bring more housing into the region and to deal with issues like open space and parks, but when I go back to the conversation around the production-based economy and how you can integrate those into these live-work-play developments more effectively than maybe had been planned on a few that some of the ones that have already been implemented recently. So I apologize if it ran long from where we were. I'm going to figure out a way to stop sharing my screen for a moment here. There we go. Okay. So that I will turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate all that. It's a lot to digest. Appreciate all the detail and the information there. We are running very short on time, but I do want to to the board here, if there's any immediate or important questions or comments they wanted to get out now. I'm sure this will remain an agenda item at our next meeting, so we can certainly continue this conversation, and I'd welcome inviting Kyle back next month if there's more conversation we want to have in regards to any of this after folks have had the time to digest it. But with that, any board member who wants to, in the short time we have now, make any questions or comments for Kyle?
Through the chair, it's Ken. Just one quick thought question. So one thought, obviously this is a long-term process and you know, regionalizing activities is always difficult with budgets that everybody has issues with. But as part of this, I mean, have you reached out, or have you thought about perhaps trying to have a little meeting like this with the various community economic development directors, as opposed to solely with us? I mean, as a group, because it would seem to me that they've got the most knowledge, insight, and, you know, and would have to buy into anything that gets considered. So just a thought that maybe over the next month or two, rather than coming back here first, to have a step like that at this, some point in the next few months. Thanks.
Kyle, we can take that quickly if you don't, if that's all right, Ken.
Ken, yeah, thank you for the question. So as part of the outreach, we have set up meetings with all municipal economic development officials back in February, I believe. So we were able to have get Kyle to have one-on-one interviews with those municipal economic development folks. I think we spoke with Frank in the city of Bridgeport, but we also spoke to the local chambers as well, the BRBC, as well as the Fairfield Chamber and the Monroe Chamber. And we've been reaching out also to other stakeholders, the workplace. We've reached out to private industries, anyone who would talk to us from a private sector standpoint. So that was part of the kind of the data outreach that we've done in this process to date. And this is more or less to get all the technical information that Kyle needed. So he was able to kind of put this together. So we'd be happy to reach out to them again and speak to them more thoroughly.
Well, I think, Matt, you're misconstruing a little bit. What I'm suggesting is not talking to staffers like the person you mentioned, but unless the principals of those departments and different communities get involved with Kyle's group and have some discussion as a group, you know, doing silos and having meetings with one-on-one to collect information is a lot different than having economic development directors discuss with them their thoughts on this and all that. That's all.
Yeah, that's certainly, I mean, Tim, that's certainly something we can do. As Pat said, you know, the initial kind of outreach was to kind of figure out where the lay of the land for Kyle's perspective, put the plan together from a municipality by municipality basis. But I think going forward, you know, convening all the economic development directors on a single kind of meeting and discussion is a good idea. And we'll take that going forward, certainly.
Thank you. I concur. I think that's an excellent idea and suggestion, Ken. Thank you. Anyone else with a... Okay, seeing none, I guess we'll wrap that part up. Thank you again, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Okay. All right, we're getting on to the rest of our agenda. Sorry. Item five.
Sorry, through the chair, just a quick, Matt, is it possible just to distribute the PowerPoint to us at some point in the next little while, if that's okay?
Yeah, we will resend it.
I mean, if you want to call it draft or however you want to do it.
It was sent out, but we'll send it out again. There was a couple modifications, small modifications that were made. So we will send it out again after the meeting.
Sorry. Thanks.
No problem. It happens.
Okay. Action item A, the MetroCog fiscal year 22. Attachment B. I think we talked about this at the last meeting, and I believe Matt's going to walk us through a recommendation to migrate from the current Connecticut plan, which is the first column on the left, the Flex POS HSA plan, to the Connecticut Choice Bronze POS HSA plan. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes, that is correct, Ken. So this is we will be staying with the same provider. What this change does for us is lowered our monthly premiums on the existing employee base, which actually allowed us to incorporate an employee that previously had not utilized our health benefits, but is now coming on board, and equating to basically a $0 change year over year from last year to this year, with adding an employee and their spouse. So we changed the internal Connecticut program from the choice to the POS to choice, which has a slightly smaller group of providers, but we checked with all staff, and that change was not going to affect anyone's existing providers in any way, shape, or form. There's a couple of pieces that might have a problem at some point, but it's more based on the kind of the extracurricular types of MRIs and those things that they have specific places you should do those versus just doing them in the hospital potentially. But it didn't have a significant change on anyone's current healthcare providers or physicians. So we thought it was a good idea to try to save the money where possible and keep our increase in healthcare costs basically flat from year over year.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Matt. And just to be clear, I know you're if I'm reading this right, you are showing like a 14% decrease in the premium.
Yeah, that's a 14% decrease based on the employees that were part of the plan last year. So it doesn't include the addition, but the addition basically brings us back to flat 0%.
Right. That was my understanding. I just want to make sure it was clear to the rest of the board.
Yep. Correct.
Okay. Right. With that, I would entertain a motion to approve the recommendation to move to the ConnectiCare Benefits Choice Bronze POS HSA plan as recommended.
No glass, yes. Moved. So moved.
Your second?
It's Vicky Tesoro. I'll second that.
Thank you. Matt, would you do us the honors?
I can. First Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trumbull.
Yes.
First Selectman Bindleglass, Town of Easton.
Yes.
Jackie Bertolone, Town of Fairfield.
Yes.
Ken Flato, City of Bridgeport.
Yes.
And First Selectman Kellogg, Town of Monroe.
Yes.
Okay. Passed, carries unanimously.
Thank you all. Moving on to other business, item A, the financials. Take it away.
I will turn this over to Colleen Kelleher, Finance Director.
Yeah, just quickly, we made final projections, and right now it looks like that we're going to end 2021 with a surplus. So it's not too different from what it was last time we met, but if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay, what is the, that is the 524 or the, let's see, I'm trying to, what's the net surplus going to be?
It's going to be about 50,000, a little more than 50,000.
Is that the delta between your?
It's the delta between the variances from the original budget. So it's the 524,487 in the revenue and the 590,101 in the expenses.
Got it. Great. Okay. And that, in comparison to the, contribution to fund balance that we had budgeted for this fiscal year?
We had set out a goal of, last year we obviously, I think partly due to COVID and the lack of spending, we had increased our net to fund balance for fiscal year 20 at over $100,000. We were budgeting, we had budgeted in the budget for this year and the expectation of at least $40,000, which was kind of more of our normal year over year fund balance increase. So we're meeting or exceeding that goal, obviously with the audit to come, but our numbers historically through the work that Colleen, myself, and Pat have been doing have been pretty accurate as to what the audit comes out to as well. I'm trying to track this very closely every month.
Excellent. Great. Any questions for Matt or Colleen? Okay, move on to update on the municipal on-call engineering RFQ.
Yeah, so we received a significant amount of replies on that. I believe the total number was 39 firms that submitted proposals to that municipal on-call RFQ. So needless to say, it took a while to go through each of those proposals. Bob Kulak in our office engineer has done a significant amount of legwork, kind of taking all the proposals, reviewing them all, getting an understanding of which firms provide which types of services. We have grouped them into about five or six different subgroups of services that are being provided or that were identified in the various proposals. Some of those subgroups will likely just move forward with that being the on-call list because the number is very small. There's a few of the services mainly to do with road intersection improvements and traffic signal and traffic engineering that have a significant number of firms that are all very capable. We will be moving forward with interviews with those firms over the next couple weeks and expect to have all the on-call lists hopefully finalized by mid to close to the end of June. That you all will be able to utilize for any of the services.
Great. I think getting this in place to be ready for, ready to hit the ground next fiscal year will be a great thing.
Yeah, that was my goal. This process was to make sure we had everything ready to go for July 1, if not sooner.
Great. Any questions on this from the board? All right, moving on to hazardous waste.
So we did put out an RFI for regional hazardous waste collection. I regret to inform you that there were no responses to the RFI. There was an issue with the state site. The DAS site changed over right as we were trying to post this. And we were not able to, in the infinite wisdom, our existing account did not carry over to the new state account, the new state system. So we had to apply for one, and we didn't get the our new login information and account information until 2 days before the RFI was supposed to close. So we now have that. My plan is to reissue that RFI in the next week or so, utilizing the state database, which was BizNet and has now moved to a better system, and should be more easier to find and better, I think, better results based on the new system and where it's kind of how it's engineered versus what the old system was. So we are going to go back out for that and try to do some more direct outreach to agencies and firms that we know have conducted this, which we did in the past. So I'm not really sure if there was some just lack of time or lack of ability to respond to it. But we are going to go back out to try to get some more better information. We do have all the information from each municipality on their current offerings or their current regional offerings, as is the case for Town of Monroe, Trumbull, and Easton. So we do expect to get something back on that, but I do think that we were hindered a little bit by the state turnover on their system. Okay. So we will go back out on that one.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. Any questions or comments on that from the board? Okay. Thanks, Matt. Office of Early Childhood Home Visitation Program.
Yeah, so this is a program being funded statewide through the ARP money that's coming, the American Rescue Plan money that's coming to the state of Connecticut. It is being coordinated by the Office of Early Childhood as well as Department of Public Health and DCF. And this will provide universal home visitation for newborns up to at least three home visits by a nurse or healthcare worker in the region for every newborn in our region. And one of the reasons I wanted to focus on this or just raise this was Office of Early Childhood has decided to do this on a cog by cog basis as the rollout, and MetroCog is going to be the first region that is part of this program. There was a kickoff meeting Monday morning with Governor Lamont and the commissioners of Office of Early Childhood and DCF and DPH that I attended. So they are looking to roll this out coming, I think, mid to late June or early July. As more information is out there, I will let you all know. And Ken, I'll work with you if we do want the Commissioner of Office of Early Childhood to come give a short presentation, we can probably facilitate that as well. But this would be something that would be available to every newborn and their parents in the region over the course of the next 3 years.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would be important for the board to get more information as it becomes available, particularly so that we can make sure we're communicating with our residents and
yes,
being educated so we can answer questions when they inevitably come in as well.
100%. That's why I want to make you aware of it now, because I'm sure there'll be some questions at some point that people see a press release or something and want to make sure you're all aware of it.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions on this? Comments? Okay. I know we talked a little bit at the MPO meeting about the American Rescue Plan regional initiatives. I think, to Ken's point earlier, I think we all have a long list of our own things that we're looking to accomplish. I'll just say from my own perspective, I mean, I still don't have clarity on a lot of the rules. We're waiting for more information. I continue to get mixed messages on what can and can't be done. So I'd like to kind of defer this until the next meeting. I mean, certainly if there is something that has regional applicability, I'm welcome to entertain it, but I don't know that we need to go into any further right now, unless someone wants to chime in with a burning matter. Hearing none, let's go on to the ARLF supplemental funding.
Yes, I just want to make you aware. This is I've raised this to the board a couple times previously. So we're working with the city of Bridgeport. They have an existing revolving loan fund from EPA, as does MetroCog on a regional basis. The city approached us in coordination with EPA, asking if we would be willing to take over the administration of that money. It's an onerous administration process if you're not doing it all the time. Patrick, Colleen, and Hannah in our office do a great job staying on top of our EPA grants, which do require a significant amount of administration time to make sure you're doing it correctly and dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, as the ARP money will be similar, I'm sure. So we are in the process there, and we expect that to be finalized in the next month or so.
They just reviewed.
EPA is reviewing the final letters right now. So what that will do basically is just provide additional supplemental funding to our current RLF fund, which will just give us more money to potentially leverage for projects in the region. So I just wanted to make you all aware that was happening. We're going to end up with about 1.7 million or so
total
of revolving loan fund from the EPA, based on our existing grant that we received in 2015 for $900,000 and a supplemental that we received last year and this additional money. So we have continue to work very well with EPA to administer and program this brownfields money for the region.
Okay, great. Any questions, comments, concerns on that? Seeing none. All right, looks like we have just our next meeting dates, June 24th, July 29th.
I did have one more item. I just wanted to just quickly ask a question of the board. Going forward, our thought was that these kind of, we obviously had the option for in-person today, but people had things come up, which I certainly understand. If it was the a belief of the board that, these hybrid type meetings will continue going forward, we're going to look at some additional better technology hardware wise for casting the video from the conference room rather than a computer set up on the podium. There's a couple better types of alternatives out there that will actually auto focus on who's speaking and split the Zoom screen and those sorts of things. So I just wanted to get your all thoughts. If you thought that would be a valuable investment for the region, we would look into that more thoroughly as we move forward, if these types of meetings will continue in the future, you think?
Well, I think that, I know there's some pending legislation kicking around
yes.
that can't change things significantly. I think regardless of that, I think, under the current rules, remote participation of board members was always allowed. We've typically done it on the phone. I think
yes.
A video option, I think, is always, I think, would probably be welcomed
okay.
as another option. But unless anyone has any other, any thoughts on that, I mean, I think it makes sense to me.
Okay. You know, yeah, that was my thought too, but I wanted to.
Anyone have a different perspective or?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the world has changed the legislation is going to, I think agree with a lot of that as well. Interested to see what they finally pass, but I agree that that's an option that we should have.
Great, yeah, I think it would just create a better hybrid experience for everyone involved. I think with some of the better technology than although what we have currently works, I think we can make it a little better and better experience for all.
All right, that is fine. Thank you.
Great.
Before we adjourn, I just want to note that I will be asking Matt to. Find everyone's availability so I can get the entire board together for a very, hopefully very brief special meeting next week, just to address one quick matter. So just please be on the lookout for that. Other than that, and just saying that my it's going to be, because it's brief, I think we could probably do it all. We could do it fully remote. So with that, if there's nothing else, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Vicki Tesoro, make that motion.
Thank you. Can you second?
Second, Bindle Glass.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
That does it. Thank you all very much.
Good weekend. Thank you.
Bye.